Welcome to Worlds Apart. Doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result was once described as the definition of insanity. But with Democrats close to retaining the U.S. Senate, it is now being positioned as almost a great new deal. Can America pull itself from its current economic and political debacles by repeating tired mantras and holding on to the same old elites? Well, to discuss that, I'm now joined by Rob Ury, author of Zen Economics. Mr. Ury, it's great to see you. Great to talk to you. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Oksana.
Now, even before these latest midterm elections, you've criticized the Biden administration for ineptness, saying that the problem with the liberals is that they believe their own BS. But this strategy seems to be working out handsomely for them, at least for now, because the midterm results seem to be much better than expected. How do you interpret that?
Well, I agree that the midterm results were better than expected for the Democrats. I would point that the estimates in the United States for having actual results for the election are up to 1 month, 4 weeks before we know who holds the Senate, which the country of Venezuela can tabulate their votes within a few hours. How can a technologically sophisticated country like the United States spend an entire month counting votes? And so there's this odd situation in the United States where it doesn't seem to be technically feasible to hold an election and get results that are meaningful in a timely manner.
It may not be good for the country, but it certainly it seems to be good for the people in power. Is that what you're saying?
I would put that in the category of be careful what they wish for, because there are really two or more tracks taking place in the United States right now. And you mentioned before that the elites are driving policy now. And I would suggest that this is true pretty much around the world. I don't see how, for instance, the German people would be going along with the German leadership's participation in this war with winter coming. It seems like a catastrophic strategy to me, but elites are most definitely driving this process. And from an American perspective, most of the American people have nothing to do with these decisions. They are completely removed from the democratic process. And this happens in two different ways. I mentioned the electoral system here, which it takes a month apparently to determine the outcome of an election. The other aspect would be that the elections are almost completely removed from the day-to-day lives of the American people. And so the American people, I believe, if provided good information and left to their own devices, would come to far more reasonable and informed conclusions than they're coming to about world events right now.
In your articles, you mentioned that, in your view at least, this epoch of American imperial arrogance is becoming unmoored. And I think unmoored is such an accurate term here, because you're not talking about ending as some may have wished. You're talking about becoming unhinged, losing constraints or losing the safeguards that kept it in place before. And we've seen that for a number of years internationally, with America withdrawing from major arms treaties or negating on the commitments that it previously respected. Where do you think it's all leading?
This is the million-dollar question, Oksana. We in the United States, and there are people who have a lot of information and people who don't have that information, but we who are paying close attention to this do not understand it. We do not understand what the plan is. I can articulate what's been said, and that is that there is this long-term plan for the United States to ally with some nations, essentially divide the world into pieces. And but how that's going to work makes no sense at all in the present. I haven't heard it explained. It's not being explained to the American people. And so the question is, how will this work? And so you're asking this from Moscow. We're trying to understand it here. And the information coming from American elites who are driving this process is historically uninformed. And they are not providing answers as to why being involved in Ukraine or around the borders of Russia makes any sense at all in this particular time.
Now, Mr. Yuri, can I seize upon this argument of ignorance that you are using a lot in your writing? And I think ignorance is not a crime. I mean, many of us remember Socrates, who used to say that the more I know, the more I know that I don't know. So this is actually a great thing to doubt, you know, the dogmas and to recognize the unknown. But are you sure that it's sort of genuine not knowing, as opposed to knowing full well and violently preventing others, their own people and the rest of the world from, you know, analyzing the reality as it is and experiencing it as it is?
I largely agree with the point that you just made. And this gets me back to the point about elites driving this process. And so the elites have information that they're not sharing. They have logic that they're not sharing. Question is what can we do about this? And so I don't believe there are multiple interests. I'm an economist, or I come from an economics background. That's what I've done professionally for all these years. And there are economic factors driving this that really go back a century. The nostalgia for World War II leaves Americans in an odd position, because World War II didn't take place in the United States. The United States participated, but it took place in Europe and Russia. And so we have a different experience of the Great Patriotic War. And I don't believe that experience is really understood by the Americans, the remaining Americans who prosecuted that. And the current nostalgia for the Second World War, it is insane. It was a horrible, one of the worst, most catastrophic events in human history.
Well, it was the bloodiest war on record. But you have a very interesting point tying war to economy that I haven't heard many people make before. And this is a distinction between militarism as weaponized contest between nations and militarism as a development or profit-making strategy. And many of our viewers, I'm sure, are aware of the influence that the military-industrial complex has on the American politics and American policy. But you, for example, give an example of a country of Bolivia whose government, the United States, recently tried to undermine, which happens to be a major source of lithium that is very valuable for the electric car industry. So are you essentially saying that it's not just weapons manufacturers that are benefiting from war making, but also civilian industries that are indirectly dependent on militarism as their developmental strategy?
That's what I'm saying. And in order to understand this requires going back quite a ways in history. I would suggest 1919, when Woodrow Wilson, the American liberal, sent the American Expeditionary Force to involve themselves in the Bolshevik Revolution and to try to negotiate that in favor of the United States. And what was going on there was, I'm not sure what it's called, if it's called the First World War in Russia or not, if it's known by that. But that was the first industrial war, and it was an imperial war that was a grab for industrial resources, industrial inputs. What came out of that was the Soviet system, the American system, And now we have the Chinese system coming online here. And so military production is a business in and of itself. The imperial imperative, if you will, is to control resources that go into industrial production. And so I believe that the United States is right now looking at the decision that was made about 40 years ago in the U.S. to deindustrialize the country, to turn it into a financial center, the world's bank, if you will, and leave industrial production to Russia and China and Germany, others in Europe and whatnot. But economics play into this profoundly. And so part of what's so difficult to understand about the current circumstance is, what are the economic motives? What appears to be going on in the United States is this, that's not having better ideas.
If I may stop you here, Mr. Yuri, because I think that's a very interesting point to consider, because it's one thing to attack Bolivia or try to undermine Bolivia, Iraq, or any other small or mid-sized country, or, for example, to try to benefit from a global conflict, as happened for the United States during World War II. But it's quite another thing to directly challenge a country the size and, I'm sorry to say, strength as Russia, because it is you know, a formidable partner or a formidable enemy that the United States has never been directly involved with. What do you think is the calculus there? Because Ukraine in and of itself does not have that many mineral resources. It has some, but, you know, rational analysis would suggest that it's not worth putting your, you know, existential interest, your own survival as a nation on the line in order to get it. So what do you think is ultimately driving this you know, decision to pick up the fight with Russia?
This is one of the great mysteries. I've been an American citizen and paid attention as the Cold War ended and as it was greatly hoped in the United States that the U.S. would partner with Russia and that the direction that the Russian people wanted to take Russia in would be facilitated by the United States as a helpful partner. After the Cold War years, which we suffered through in the United States, as you did in Russia, through disinformation and just this general militarism, this has come in the present to seem like nostalgia for a truly unpleasant period in human history. And so you're asking for a rational explanation. And as I said earlier, this doesn't make sense to me. I believe that the way that the United States leadership is looking at this is in a World War II frame, where they're looking at the historical tensions between Russia and Germany and China coming online as this giant source of industrial production and whatnot. And they're not. Why Russia? I mean, it makes no more sense here than it does to you.
Okay, well, if it doesn't make sense, Mr. Yuri, let's take a break, a very short break right now to think over it. But we will come back to this very puzzling question in just a few moments. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Worlds Apart with Rob Urey, author of Zen Economics. Mr. Urey, before the break, we were talking about how the American decision to sort of very deliberately pick up the fight with Russia doesn't make any rational or strategic sense. But on the other hand, the Russians, with their launch of a military operation in Ukraine, have picked up that fight. And for Russia, there is no point of no return after launching that that campaign in Ukraine. It's, I think for most people here, they understand that it's either we win this war on you know, on certain terms, or the country will perish. Do you think the stakes are just as high for the United States? Are American existential issues, or at least the existential interest of the American elites, involved in this matter?
Given the economic motives that I perceive to be behind the elites' actions, a few people making themselves even more rich than they already are, while putting the entire rest of humanity at risk through what appears to be gratuitous military action, or if broader, longer history is brought in, can be explained from the Russian perspective. But there is a political logic to it. But from the American perspective, no political logic has been applied to this. And so the Americans who are actually interested in these questions are, as I keep returning to, are puzzled by the American motives here. And so if I could bring in environmental concerns as well, it appears that the world is in a position where a tiny group of elites, international elites, led by the Americans, are in a position of holding the rest of us hostage. The American people are in a similar position to the Russian people. If it's intolerable for certain events to unfold, then that's going to impact the Americans through the American response. And there does appear, once again, I'll say, to be this 20-year plan, grand strategy, great powers, politics, or what have you. But this is nostalgia. It's nostalgia for an age that has passed. And the stakes are so high now. I mentioned the American people and the Russian people here together because, and I would throw the Ukrainian people in there who aren't affiliated with the Ukrainian military. But we are the people who are going to lose here, and the elites win if there's anything to be won. And so I understand the political logic of the Russian position. I've gone through the history and can discuss it here, but what's missing is any understanding that's been expressed by the American elites and the military elites as to what the long-term plan is.
Now, I want to make use of your very dramatic and colorful background and. You know, when you say that there is no rational explanation, I think there's also an irrational explanation, which, by the way, the Russian president often refers to. And this is just the belief on the part of some American decision makers that they're gods. You know, that the entire globe, the rest of humanity exists in order to serve them, even though they already have accumulated, you know, more than enough resources that can last the families for generations and generations. And yet, for some reason, they want to continue amassing more power and more money, even though it directly damages their own people. Because even though the results of the latest elections seem to be in favor of the Democrats, it's pretty clear that the level of polarization in the United States is perilous. It's unsustainable the way it is. No society can exist when divisions, social and economic and political divisions, are so huge. Don't you think that at the end of the day, you know, it's good that it came to such a hot point that at the very least, this decision and the, you know, the thinking about this problem can no longer be postponed. People will have to react, and they will have to break through electoral barriers or any other barriers that prevent them from putting their own stamp on the policies of their country.
There seem to be so many better options that granting any good outcome from the current trajectory, the current actors and their actions, I wouldn't grant that. And what I would say is that I would go back to Perestroika. Why wouldn't America look to see the best outcomes for Russia here? And this gets back to this military paranoia. It's left over from World War II, which is left over from World War I, which began in this fundamental difference of systems, which no longer exists. I've listened to Mr. Putin's speeches. He's very eloquent. He's a very bright guy. And I believe that he's got a pretty good grasp of the geopolitics here. And I don't disagree with what it is that you said about the possibly the back against, the sense of a back against the wall. And from my perspective, that's a tragic mistake. I would just suggest that once again, the American people are overwhelmingly decent. And were we controlling, were this a democratic state, and there were actual democratic control of the United States, that there would be different outcomes. From what I understand, I've worked with a number of Russians over the years and met Russians and whatnot. And from what I understand, there's this tremendous potential for sympathy between the peoples. Mm-hmm. And it's angering, really, that what elites, and I will say global elites at this point, are coming up with is more warfare.
Yeah, well, I actually, you know, what I want to say is that I think the Russians are now living the American phase when they finally realize that they want to be themselves. They want to live on their land. They want to build it. They want to break away from all the American influence, or rather the American diktat and the American very clear attempts to put their hands on the resources of other nations and give them, you know, glass beads in return. But that brings me to the question of whether the system as it is right now can really exist, because it's one thing to pick up the fight against Russia, but what the Americans are doing is also they are trying to, you know, penalize other countries for not, you know, either joining their camp or simply being neutral. Don't you think that they themselves destroy the system that they so painstakingly wove and that brought them so many goodies? Do you think that system in and of itself can sustain after everything that happened over the last couple of months?
This is the question that I'm really, that I would put to the American elites who are driving this process. How does returning Germany to 1933 conditions benefit the United States or Russia? Those weren't good years. The Great Depression, Adolf Hitler came to power in 1933.
Well, the Americans traded with Adolf Hitler, you know that. So it's to some, it's a good business opportunity.
Yeah, I've written a bit about the American relationship with the Nazis, and it's something that Americans know almost nothing about. Again, why is there any need logically in the political logic of the West for creating the crises that are being created? One thing in the United States that I think people haven't thought about is that our energy bills are doubling. Food prices are going through the roof. This has been explained as an economic inflation, but this is a geopolitical inflation. This is what's happening. And I'm well enough off so that I can probably afford to heat my house here, but most of America isn't. And how we're a few months away from winter, quicker, more sooner for you than it is for me. But what is the other side of this winter going to look like if half the German people freeze? That Europe is in a food crisis, an energy crisis, and the United States is as well. How much support is going to be sustained for an elite political action in the midst of mass immiseration? And it doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense, and yet it does, because I think both China and Russia have had that periods of humiliation. I mean, in China, it's called the century of humiliation. In Russia, it was, you know, those bitter years of the 1990s when we really ate our humble pie, so to say. So sooner or later, you know, that moment of reckoning comes to any great power or any power that considers to be itself to be greater than it really is. Now, we only have a minute or so left, and I want to ask you about your book, because it contains a very interesting message. You argue that unless we as a human collective, and I really stress humanity here, you know, all the people that inhabit this beautiful planet behind your back, and unless we as a human collective change the system through reimagining and changing the ways we relate to the world, human society will ultimately collapse. And I agree with it on a very deep, soulful level. And yet, I think that for many people, it's hard to operationalize it. What would you recommend to each one of us, you know, in America, in Russia, in Pakistan, in South Africa, anywhere in the world? What is it that we can do in our own very little, very humble way that can produce that tiny but vital change?
Nothing. This is a problem of elite power and control, and solving environmental issues through solving industrial problems, rearranging the way that we work and the way that we live is the only way forward. And this has to be done systematically. And so what I'm hoping is that the insanity of the current trajectory will become apparent to people in time to save us. We have about 6 months or so to understand the nature of the situation that we're living through and come to terms with it, or I'm sorry, I'm just not optimistic.
Well, you know, I am actually, because it occurred to me that while there may be very little hope for you in the United States, we as Russians, we are living, you know, our destiny, our national destiny. And there are many other countries. I speak to people from around the world, and there are many other countries that are no longer playing to the American tune or the tune of the American elites, and that are bold enough to pursue their own path, a path that is in synchronicity with the interest of the world. They're mindful of their own national interest, but they're also mindful of the larger good and how, what to make to get along and to leave and let leave. So I think ultimately something good may come out of this war, but we will have to discuss it some other time. For the meantime, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
And thank you for watching. Hope to see you again next week on Worlds Apart. We'll be right back.